When your children reach school age, the seemingly simple logistics of family life suddenly become extraordinarily complex. That moment when you realize your carefully planned family dinners are happening in the car between activities, or when you're frantically coordinating who can pick up a sick child from school, these aren't just inconveniences, they're symptoms of a deeper challenge. Emily Oster, an economist by training and mother of two, found herself applying business principles to these family decisions almost by accident. Her data-driven approach that served her well during pregnancy and early childhood, documented in her previous bestsellers, needed evolution as her children entered elementary school. The book has resonated deeply with high-performing parents seeking balance, from tech executives to celebrity parents like Mindy Kaling, who praised its structured approach to family management. What makes this book revolutionary isn't just its practical advice, but how it legitimizes treating family management with the same seriousness we bring to our professional lives. The cornerstone of the family firm approach is establishing your family's big picture, a deliberate vision of what you want your family life to look like. This isn't just about vague aspirations, but practical considerations. Which meals will you eat together? What are your bedtime routines? How will weekends be structured? What are your work arrangements as parents? What's your broader philosophy on independence versus structure? This upfront investment delivers immediate benefits by enabling better task delegation. Once basic principles are established, many decisions can be triaged, made by one person without consultation, which dramatically reduces family conflict. Think about workplace dynamics. We typically respect colleagues' decisions in their domains without micromanaging. Yet in families, parents often unnecessarily second-guess each other over minor choices like shoe selections or snack options. Creating your family's big picture involves two key steps. First, align values and priorities through a structured process where all parenting stakeholders independently write down their vision. A one-sentence family mission statement, main goals for children, personal priorities, and must-do activities. This exercise often reveals unstated desires. Perhaps one parent secretly wants to return to work full-time, or another prioritizes religious education more highly than previously discussed. The second step moves from values to practicalities by creating actual calendars for weekdays and weekends. This ensures that stated values, like family dinner, are supported by concrete plans for implementation. Who's cooking? When will shopping happen? These schedules should be documented and revisited when circumstances change, like new school years or terms. Family principles translate shared values into specific rules that anyone can implement without lengthy discussions. They function as a triage system, allowing family members to make consistent decisions independently. Some principles can be established immediately, while others evolve as new situations arise. Finally, deliberately allocate significant family tasks. List major activities, estimate their time commitments, and assign responsibility, including age-appropriate tasks for children. Once responsibilities are assigned, others must resist micromanaging. Even if your child packs the same lunch every day or doesn't fold laundry perfectly, keeping quiet is essential for the system to work. While the big picture handles day-to-day decisions, significant choices, like school selection, extracurriculars, or technology use, require a more deliberate approach. These high-impact decisions deserve the 4 F's treatment: frame the question, fact find, final decision, and follow-up. The process begins by precisely identifying what decision needs to be made. Gather all involved adults, and sometimes the relevant child, to discuss logistics, costs, benefits, risks, concerns, and excitement. The goal isn't to decide immediately, but to determine what information you need and assign responsibilities for gathering it. The fact-finding stage involves gathering evidence, populating fake calendars to visualize logistical impacts, researching published data, collecting information specific to your circumstances, and talking to other parents with relevant experience. The process should be interactive. Gather information, share it, identify gaps, and continue until you have what you need. With necessary information in hand, make your final decision. This may require multiple meetings, since there's rarely an obvious choice. The goal isn't certainty that you've made the right choice, that's impossible, but confidence that you've made it thoughtfully. The follow-up step is crucial but often overlooked. You need a concrete plan for reviewing your decisions. For example, if you choose travel soccer, schedule an end-of-season evaluation to assess how it went. Don't automatically continue just because you did it once. Avoid the trap of hysteresis, the tendency to stay on your current path despite new information. Implementing this approach won't happen overnight, and your system might not look exactly like what's described. The core idea is that important decisions should be made deliberately through some structured process. This prevents decisions from taking over your shower thoughts, commute, and every conversation with your partner. While business processes aren't substitutes for good decision-making, adopting workplace tools can significantly improve your family's functioning. Task management software allows you to create projects, assign tasks, track progress, and comment on activities. These systems combine efficient tracking, reminders, and transparency about responsibilities. A major advantage is keeping all relevant comments about a task in one thread rather than scattered across emails. Shared calendars might look chaotic with different colors for each family member, but having all this information in one place is invaluable. They allow everyone to see schedules and enable coordination without constant check-ins. When your childcare provider requests time off, you can quickly see if you can cover most of it and if your partner can handle the remaining hour, saving a conversation for more interesting topics later. Shared documents are useful for family information like packing lists, meeting agendas for parent-teacher conferences or doctor visits, and family principles. Google Docs is simple, flexible, easy to use and share, making it the obvious choice. Beyond these basics, you may find specific pressure points that need targeted solutions. Menu planning might be easier with a specialized app than with Google Docs. There are apps for all kinds of family needs, from planning travel sports to managing custody arrangements. These tools apply beyond parenting to many household operations, from house buying processes to renovation tracking. They facilitate cross-family coordination with grandparents through shared calendars and information documents. Ultimately, these processes distribute the mental burden that often falls on one person. Let the computer hold all the household information. It doesn't get tired, has plenty of memory, and won't become passive-aggressive when something is forgotten. Sleep is absolutely essential for children's development and functioning. Despite appearing maladaptive, becoming unconscious and vulnerable for hours each day, sleep persists across all animals because it's vital for survival. Without sleep, rats die within weeks, even when well-fed, and humans function poorly on cognitive tasks. For school-aged children, recommendations suggest 9 to 11 hours nightly. Studies consistently show correlations between sleep and academic performance. A survey of 3,000 Rhode Island high schoolers found students with worse grades slept less, went to bed later, and experienced more weekend oversleep. A meta-analysis of 17 studies with nearly 20,000 children confirmed that poor sleep quality, insufficient sleep, and daytime sleepiness all correlate with poor school performance. Experimental studies where researchers manipulated sleep time show even small changes matter. Children who lost just 1 hour of sleep performed worse on memory and math tests and showed poor emotional regulation, according to parents. According to the National Sleep Foundation, school-aged children need 9 to 11 hours of sleep nightly, and teenagers need 8 to 10 hours. Most kids get less. Studies using monitoring devices suggest school-aged children average about 8 hours, down from historical levels. However, the evidence on exact sleep requirements is less conclusive than evidence that sleep matters generally. Parents can experiment to find their child's optimal sleep needs by watching for signs of adequate rest. Not feeling sleepy during the day, taking 15 to 20 minutes, not hours, to fall asleep at bedtime, and not sleeping significantly longer on weekends when given the chance. Sleep must be protected when creating the family calendar. Adding extra activities isn't useful if your child is too tired to benefit from them. Working backward from wake-up time, often dictated by school schedules, and required sleep hours determines appropriate bedtimes and evening activity limits. While adults often sacrifice sleep when busy, we shouldn't make the same mistake for our children. School-age children require parents to reconsider work and childcare arrangements. With children in school from roughly 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., new logistical challenges emerge around drop-offs, pickups, after-school care, extracurricular activities, sick days, and school breaks. Research on how parental work affects children faces methodological challenges since work decisions aren't random. However, extensive studies reveal two key findings. First, effects of parental work on children's outcomes are generally very small. Meta-analyses combining hundreds of studies show correlations between maternal employment and test scores that are barely detectable. Second, these small effects vary across demographic groups, with slightly more negative effects in wealthier families and more positive effects in lower-income families, families of color, single-parent households, and for girls. Unlike test scores, research consistently shows children with working parents have slightly higher obesity risks. A 2014 study found maternal employment of 40 hours increased obesity risk by about 4 percentage points. Children with working mothers consumed fewer fruits and vegetables, more fast food and soda, watched more TV, but also participated more in organized sports. However, these correlations don't prove causation. When considering work arrangements, we must look beyond child outcomes to parental needs. Work serves two purposes: income and personal fulfillment. The financial calculation should include not just immediate earnings, but also childcare costs, career trajectory, and the marginal utility of additional dollars. Parents' preferences matter too, sometimes in unexpected ways. Research shows that while both career and family enhance life satisfaction, they don't simply add together. For highly educated women especially, balancing both often leads to stress. The logistics differ dramatically depending on whether all adults work outside the home. With a stay-at-home parent, the basic after-school coverage is settled, though scheduling challenges remain. When all adults work, you need comprehensive planning, after-school programs, enrichment activities, transportation logistics, and contingencies for school breaks and sick days. Feeding children requires more planning and structure than adult meals. Kids need consistent meal timing, and parents worry more about developing healthy eating habits in children, hoping to shape their malleable tastes despite resistance. The key decisions involve establishing food rules and meal structures. Will you allow sugar? Have snacking rules? Encourage fruits and vegetables? Will you eat together as a family? Nutrition science is notoriously unreliable, constantly flip-flopping on recommendations. The limited, reliable evidence suggests eating some fruits and vegetables is good, while empty-calorie foods like soda aren't ideal for weight management. Most importantly, childhood food preferences tend to persist into adulthood, as shown in multiple studies tracking eating habits from early childhood through college. Studies show college students like foods they ate as children, and children who eat more vegetables at age 1 continue to eat more at age 6. Even specific snack preferences remain stable. Girls who liked Skittles at age 5 still ranked them highly at age 11. Early exposure to flavors affects long-term preferences, with evidence showing flavors experienced in utero and infancy influence later taste preferences. Most kids naturally prefer traditional kid foods, like pasta, mac and cheese, nuggets, and hot dogs. The good news is that food neophobia, fear of new foods, peaks around age 4 and declines afterward, so elementary schoolers are often more open to trying new things than toddlers. However, studies show diet quality often worsens as children age through elementary school, with fruit consumption dropping 40% between 3rd and 8th grades and vegetable consumption falling 25% as parental control decreases. Research offers practical strategies for improving children's diets, particularly vegetable consumption. Repeated exposure is key. Studies show that after 6 exposures to previously disliked vegetables, children's ratings improved from yucky to better than just okay, with consumption increasing dramatically. For bitter vegetables, older children benefit from associative conditioning, using dips like peanut butter or ranch dressing. How food is presented matters too. Smaller entree portions lead to more vegetable consumption, and serving vegetables first when children are hungry increases intake. Beyond what children eat, when and with whom they eat matters significantly. Research shows strong correlations between family meals and positive outcomes. Children who have regular family dinners are less likely to be depressed, use substances, have eating disorders, and show better academic engagement. However, these correlations may not be fully causal. The evidence suggests that while family meals correlate with positive outcomes, the benefits may come from forced family time together rather than the meal itself. Parenting labels like helicopter, tiger, free-range chicken, or ostrich are often used pejoratively, yet many parents feel pressure to conform to one style or another. Rather than adopting a single parenting philosophy, focus on specific decisions about independence, involvement, physical freedom, and life skill expectations. You can combine elements from different approaches. For instance, giving your child physical freedom while still requiring daily piano practice. When considering independence for children, parents typically fall somewhere between two approaches: the helicopter parent, who provides extensive scaffolding, versus the free-range chicken parent, who encourages self-sufficiency. For a 10-year-old's morning routine, this might mean the difference between a child who manages their entire morning independently versus one whose parent handles most tasks. While greater independence might seem ideal, it comes with natural consequences. Children will sometimes forget things or make mistakes. Research consistently shows that parental involvement generally correlates with better outcomes. Studies dating back to 1980 demonstrate that children whose parents coach them in reading develop stronger reading abilities, even controlling for IQ differences. Beyond academics, parental involvement is associated with better grades and school performance in high school students. These studies suggest that parental attitudes and encouragement matter more than specific homework help. Supporting your child's education is valuable, but completing their assignments for them isn't. While parental involvement benefits children, excessive helicopter parenting raises concerns, particularly for college students. Studies suggest that overly involved parenting correlates with reduced autonomy, less peer engagement, and higher rates of anxiety, depression, and even pain medication abuse among college students. However, these findings come with caveats. Most rely on students' perceptions of their parents' involvement, suggesting the problem may be mismatched expectations rather than the involvement itself. Tellingly, helicopter parenting only correlates with negative outcomes when students perceive their parents as lacking warmth. When incorporating independence into your family values, consider Thomas Phelan's concept of total responsibility transfer. When someone takes responsibility for a task, they own the entire process from planning to execution to consequences. If your child is responsible for remembering soccer shoes, they must develop their own system for remembering and handle the consequences of forgetting. School decisions feel monumentally important. Children spend roughly 18,720 hours in school over 13 years. Yet, while school matters greatly, it's not everything. Children spend more waking hours outside school than in it, and educational choices aren't completely inflexible. Comparing school types is challenging because attendance correlates with family characteristics beyond the school itself. The most reliable data comes from randomized studies using school lotteries, particularly with charter schools. Studies of charter schools in urban areas like Boston and New York show significant positive impacts on test scores, particularly for no-excuses models featuring long days and clear discipline policies. However, a broader analysis of 113 charter school lotteries found smaller overall effects. The alternative matters tremendously. Charter schools show the greatest benefits when the default public school performs poorly, while their impact becomes neutral or even negative when the local public school already performs well. When evaluating what makes a good school, research provides some insights. Studies show kindergarten teachers significantly impact not just immediate performance, but also adult earnings. Teacher quality in general increases college attendance and adult earnings while reducing teen pregnancy rates. More practically, smaller class sizes consistently improve student achievement both short and long term. Effective charter schools typically feature more instructional time, comprehensive teacher feedback systems, and additional tutoring. American attitudes toward homework have fluctuated dramatically over time, often driven by concerns about global competitiveness rather than research findings. The evidence on homework, while limited by methodological challenges, consistently points to positive effects on school performance. The benefits appear moderate overall, but increase significantly with age, minimal for 6 to 8-year-olds, but growing through middle school. Learning to read represents perhaps the most magical educational milestone for elementary schoolers. Understanding how reading actually works in the brain provides crucial insights into effective teaching methods. While fluent adult readers perceive themselves as recognizing familiar words through pattern recognition, neuroscience reveals we also unconsciously employ phonics, chunking and sounding out words. Experimental evidence overwhelmingly supports phonics-based instruction over whole language approaches. Parents should question schools still using whole language approaches. Getting kids to love reading requires both dedicated time and freedom of choice. Two key strategies emerge from the research. First, explicitly schedule family reading time as entertainment rather than punishment. Second, let children choose what interests them. Studies show contextual understanding dramatically impacts comprehension. Children with subject expertise understand stories better regardless of their general verbal ability. Extracurricular activities can feel like an arms race among modern parents, with pressure to enroll children in increasingly numerous and intensive activities. Unlike 30 years ago, today's activities often demand serious commitment, with multiple practices and performances weekly. When deciding on extracurriculars, parents should consider their family's big-picture values, potential benefits, physical, mental, social development, college admissions, and most importantly, what children actually enjoy. Research on youth sports and physical health focuses on three key questions: obesity prevention, exercise promotion, and establishing lifelong physical activity habits. The evidence shows that sports have limited impact on obesity. A 60-pound child burns only about 280 calories in an hour of intense soccer, easily negated by post-practice snacks. More promising are the effects on fitness levels. Children who participate in sports demonstrate better aerobic fitness, with some evidence suggesting these benefits can be sustained for years. The popular belief that music makes you smarter stems partly from the famous 1993 Mozart Effect Study, which claimed listening to classical music improved IQ scores by 8 to 9 points. However, subsequent research found effects 4 times smaller and limited to specific spatial reasoning tasks. While children who play instruments do tend to perform better academically, this correlation likely reflects selection bias rather than causation. Playing instruments does cause measurable changes in brain structure, but so is virtually any activity. Even Tetris alters the brain. Extracurricular activities offer more than just physical benefits or academic advantages. They provide crucial social belonging. Research on extracurriculars' emotional benefits shows significant improvements in mental health measures, particularly for depression and social anxiety. While most research focuses on sports, which show less social anxiety and better adaptation, studies of other activities like Boy Scouts also demonstrate improvements in measures like helpfulness and cheerfulness. The benefits seem to accrue regardless of activity type. The chances of your child being recruited to college for sports are incredibly small. Of approximately 280,000 5-year-olds playing youth soccer in the U.S., only about 4,000 students per year will play Division I soccer, roughly 1.5%, and this is likely a huge overestimate. For Ivy League schools, perhaps only 150 students annually are recruited for soccer teams. These probabilities are so small and uncertain that they shouldn't factor into elementary school activity choices. While academic literature overwhelmingly focuses on children's test scores, many parents recognize this represents only a fraction of what they want for their children. Despite society's emphasis on academic achievement, a more fundamental parental desire often emerges: I just want him to be happy. This desire becomes especially apparent when a child struggles socially. Hearing that your child has no friends or is being bullied can feel far worse than any academic challenge. Empathy development requires children to develop theory of mind, understanding what others think and feel. This progresses through stages. By age 3, about 55% of children recognize emotions from facial expressions. By 5, 75% can do this and begin understanding emotional causes. By 7, they grasp the distinction between felt and expressed emotions, and by 9, they comprehend ambivalent emotions. While some variation in these abilities is innate, research shows they can be taught. Studies demonstrate that parents who use mental state language raise children with better theory of mind. As mental health problems rise among teens, schools increasingly implement programs to reduce bullying and increase prosocial behavior. Evidence from early anti-bullying interventions in Norway showed significant success through school-level changes, increased supervision, class meetings, and community involvement. Specific programs like Finland's Kiva, with 20 hours of lessons on group dynamics, empathy, and helping strategies, have demonstrated consistent positive outcomes. Self-esteem, confidence in one's worth and abilities, differs from self-confidence. Research shows people with clearer, more stable self-concepts tend to have higher self-esteem, while those with lower self-esteem have less stable self-concepts. Survey data confirms bullying harms children's mental health, causing unhappiness, depression, and anxiety. However, not all children respond the same way to social challenges. Studies found that having even a few friends buffered against the negative effects of social isolation. Similarly, research demonstrated that children from families with greater maternal and sibling warmth showed more resilience to bullying. They maintained higher self-esteem despite being bullied. Screen time evokes fear in many parents, with headlines warning of brain changes and anxiety epidemics. Yet the reality is more nuanced. Screens aren't simply good or bad like cigarettes. The key concept here is opportunity cost. When evaluating screen time, consider what other activities are being displaced. The question isn't whether screens are inherently harmful, but whether they're better or worse than alternative uses of that time. American children aged 2 to 11 watch about 24 hours of TV weekly, not counting video games. While the American Academy of Pediatrics warns of potential harms for school-aged children, they don't specify time limits, and the evidence linking TV to negative outcomes isn't particularly compelling. Correlations likely reflect family differences rather than television's direct effects. The opportunity cost is significant. Time spent watching screens means time not spent on homework, sports, reading, or other activities. Norwegian research shows boys with TV access had lower test scores than those without, likely because it displaced study time. Similarly, French studies found reading increases test scores, while video games themselves don't decrease them. While setting screen time limits often faces resistance from children, content matters too. By age 3, kids can absorb information from screens, both good, like Sesame Street improving cognitive skills, and potentially harmful content. Each child reacts differently to content. Some are disturbed by scary scenes, while others are unbothered but sensitive to sad moments or social awkwardness. Despite popular concerns, the evidence linking violent video games to real-life aggression is weak. Laboratory studies show short-term increases in aggressive responses after violent gameplay, but longitudinal studies find no meaningful connection between video game use and lasting behavioral changes. While video game addiction gets significant media attention, it's relatively rare. Studies show only 2 to 10% of regular gamers develop problematic play habits. Those who do are more likely to be boys from disadvantaged backgrounds who may show psychological features common to other addictions. However, the relationship between screens and sleep is much clearer. Research shows children with TVs in their bedrooms sleep less, and experimental studies confirm that both TV and video games before bedtime negatively affect sleep quality, continuity, and architecture. The evidence strongly suggests avoiding screen time close to bedtime for both children and adults. As children reach middle school and get phones or regular computer access, social media becomes harder to ignore. Research on social media's effects shows mixed results. Some studies indicate potential negative impacts like increased anxiety, depression, and fear of missing out, FOMO, particularly among kids with multiple social media accounts. However, these studies don't prove causation. Kids predisposed to anxiety or depression might seek out more social media, rather than social media causing these issues. For most children, social media appears neither particularly beneficial nor harmful, though a small percentage develop problematic usage patterns.